But apparently last night at the Hollywood Bowl, Seal was in concert, and he went to the merch stand, and he brought a Kiss of the Rose hat or something.
Oh, wow.
Kiss from a rose. I mean, what?
Kiss from a rose.
Look at this hat. Look at this hat from the greatest stadium in the world, the Rose Bowl.
Listen, you got to represent the things that are close to you, right?
That's right.
Like, the Rose Bowl is amazing.
Yes.
I love this. This is my favorite hat.
It is a good looking
hat.
My
favorite game. Yep. If I was commissioner for a day, the national championship would always be the Rose Bowl.
Because
I think it's the greatest game in college football.
Hey, is that the closest a Buffalo will ever get to a Rose, though? Right behind you?
Yes. Yes. Bro. I mean, you talk about struggle bus. My goodness.
Good days are coming.
Those that don't know, I think Colorado is the worst Power 5 team out there.
Wow. Hey, can we start with Auburn, Missouri? Because we talked about this. We did an immediate post-game show.
I like the way he brought up Colorado's the worst Power 5 team out there. Yeah. Can we start with Auburn and Missouri?
Well, hey, let's go straight to Auburn. Hey, let's just talk about who Auburn's coach is going to be. I mean, Brian's not going to be there next year.
He is not. No.
There's no chance. But is there a chance that Auburn is the worst team in the SEC? I know that sounds like hyperbole, but Missouri is no good. We were talking before this game that Missouri still had a chance to lose to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's at least improved. I don't know what to think.
It's an interesting question. I mean, knowing how you guys all think, though, like a battle of the cellar of the SEC means like right in the top 25, right there in the top 25. Yeah, that's a great question. I think that the bottom of the conference is not great. Vanderbilt is getting better. Missouri seems lost. Auburn clearly lost and still needs to bottom out. I still think that you're going to probably get a Deion Sanders as a head coach. I don't know. I mean, that's from miles away. I don't know from a local perspective if that's been even talked about. But I can tell you this right now. When I look at Auburn, the only way to get to where they expect to be is to win some recruiting battles. And think of the coaches that they have got to compete with to win some of those recruiting battles. It's going to be very difficult. And so that, to me, that's the first and foremost criteria for your next coach at Auburn is going to be, can you go into any living room in America and win recruiting battles? And to me, that's Deion Sanders. So that's why I think Deion's going to be the next coach at Auburn.
There's a lot in what you just said there.
Wow.
Deion Sanders, you believe, would be the next coach at Auburn. Now, you don't have...
And that's, by the way, that's no inside information. Yeah. That's purely speculative at this point. But it just from 30,000 feet, I'm just like, you know, that makes sense to me.
Well, Affleck's going to have a new campaign because I don't see Alabama and Auburn coaches doing commercial together.
It would be fantastic if they did.
But your point is that Auburn has things, and you've seen it in recent years, where they can win and or play for a national championship. A job that's opening up right now, like Georgia Tech, which is in a fertile recruiting ground for a Deion Sanders, and his name will be mentioned there, has recruiting restrictions and not the same history as Auburn, right? Auburn offers a bigger opportunity.
I would think, you know. Now, I don't know what the SEC is going to do as far as schedule goes, and I think that is interesting as far as, you know, are you going to have to be in the SEC West necessarily? And, you know, who's in their pod? Do they still have to play Alabama every year? You would think that that's a no-brainer, obviously, with that type of rivalry. So there are inherent struggles there. But Georgia Tech is in a similar predicament. While not in the same conference, you still have to recruit against Kirby and Georgia, and they're not going anywhere. I think that's a really tough job. Now, you could make an argument, though, And bear with me for a moment. In the age of now the expanded playoff, which we're going to get, and I do think that it's going to come by 2024, in the age of the expanded playoff, would it be easier to get to the playoff at Georgia Tech or at Auburn? You could make an argument, and I'm not saying I believe this yet, but if you thought through it, you could make an argument that it might be easier at Georgia Tech because – if every conference, or let's just say the six best champions are going to go and there's a defined path, is it easier to win the ACC at Georgia Tech or be the third best team in the SEC if you're Auburn? That might be a toss-up, to be quite honest with you.
I mean, it's a legitimate conversation. I don't disagree with you on that. Joel Klatt is with us on the JohnstonRVCenter.com hotline. Don't forget they are closing out the select 2022 models, making room for 23s. That means travel trailers starting as low as $139 a month, fifth wheels $329 a month, all of that with 10% down and approved credit. You can see more I-65, exit 304 in Coleman, 334 in Decatur, and always online, JohnstonRVCenter.com. Look, Michigan's going to play tougher games than what you saw them play Saturday, Klatt, but it was the first team with a pulse that they have played.
Yeah.
Corum appears to be the real deal. Know it's coming, and they just cannot stop him. Now, maybe Iowa does it Saturday with you guys, but so far nobody's been able to.
I was impressed with him. I was impressed with him last year, but he seems to have taken his game to the next level. And it should be noted that, like, he had to do that because, and as I mentioned during the broadcast, and if you hadn't heard, they always love to rotate backs and they always have a couple of good backs. That's why Corum and Hassan Haskins last year were sharing a lot of the duties. And they've got a very good young back named Donovan Edwards, who I'm high on, but he's banged up. And so they were trying to get this kid, CJ Stokes, a true freshman, more involved. Well, they give it to him, and his first touch, he puts it on the turf. And they were just like, nope, not going to happen again. And so all of a sudden, it's going to be the Blake Corum show. Then you also piggyback that with Maryland's style of defense on Saturday was just going to be bend, don't break. It was not like, hey, let's commit everything to stop the run and force J.J. McCarthy to beat us. It was actually the exact opposite. It was, let's play umbrella style drop eight coverage, make it tough to throw the ball, don't give up explosives, and see if they're patient enough to run the ball down our throats. And then they did it. And then in a couple of those short yardage situations, those moves that Corum made, those are special moves. Okay. Normally guys in a short yardage situation, you know it and I know it, a back is just so focused on moving the chains that they dive themselves right into the middle of the line of scrimmage and they're going to move the chains and you line up to play another down. It takes a lot of self-confidence and belief in your ability to jump cut one, two, three gaps and go outside in those situations. And he did it twice, took off for a touchdown, and that was really the difference in the game. So he's clearly special. What I'm interested in moving forward for Michigan, for those of you that are like, what is Michigan moving forward? They've got a really young quarterback in J.J. McCarthy and two very inexperienced play callers. I thought that showed itself on Saturday. I didn't know. I kept pressing them. Guys, I mean, you know me now well enough, and I think your listeners do or are starting to. Like, I tend to not – I don't hide my feelings very well, right? They're generally right on my sleeve. I'll say something. I'll do – you know. And in our meetings, you know, we were talking to Sharon Moore and Matt Weiss, the co-offensive coordinators. And I get it, right? You want to call yourself co-offensive coordinators, that's fine. That's how these coaches get better contracts and pay themselves more money, and that's fine. And I understand that. Everybody wants a title nowadays. But at some point, when the rubber meets the road, someone's got to be the play caller. And this is, by the way, is an overarching conversation. So I start asking them. I'm like, okay, so like who has veto power? And they were like, oh, we do. And I was like, okay, that's cute. Who has veto power? And they can sense that I'm getting agitated in the meetings. And they were like, well, Coach Harbaugh, ultimately. And I was like, boys, who has veto power? Like, who's calling the plays? Well, we both do, and it's a contributor. You know, we contribute. And I was just like, oh my goodness. and I was disgusted. And that's what I talked about during the game. It's like, you've got to have a play caller. You've got to have a play caller because a great offensive play caller, and we've seen them, by the way, at Alabama. I thought Lane was a great play caller. I thought Sark was a great play caller. Bill O'Brien is not quite what those two guys are, but he's decent. They're like architects, guys. They build throughout the season. They build throughout the game. And they let the offense lay foundational pieces. They chum the water with looks and personnel groups and movement in order to gain an advantage at a later date, whether it's two games down the road, a quarter down the road. At some point, you've got to build yourself into success. That's what rhythm and sequencing is all about when you're calling plays. And if you don't have a singular play caller, they can't do that. What they end up doing is that they end up start picking in their bag like a kid after Halloween. And it's just like, oh, like, what do I want? What do I just want? You know, my favorite candy. Here it is. Let's call the jet sweep pass. Well, you didn't build yourself into success that way. You didn't lay down the foundation of a successful jet sweep with Ronnie Bell in order to throw a Ronnie Bell jet sweep pass later in the game. So they called the, you know, the jet sweep pass, and it's not there. And they take a negative play on a series in which they're really moving the ball, and then they end up having to punt. So my point being is Michigan's got some things to work out, and mainly between an inexperienced quarterback and an inexperienced play calling situation. I was pretty disgusted. I felt bad for them because they were looking at me. They were like, isn't this supposed to be like a cordial meeting? And I was like, who calls the plays?
Have you ever been hung up on ever in one of those?
No, this was in person. Oh, okay. You talk about awkward, yeah. Like tension with a knife. Although not the most tension filled meeting that I've ever had. Most tension filled meeting that I've ever had was with Todd Graham. I think that just says it all.
Yeah, he's a dick. Minnesota is a team, Clatt, that I thought was going to be good at the beginning of the year. I know they really haven't played anyone, but they're only giving up 6 points per game. And
you know, there you go. See, this is
I like Minnesota.
Because all the, you know, you beat South Carolina in the SEC, and it's like, boy, it's a good SEC win. But in the Big Ten, you can't go hammer Michigan State without you boys down there saying you don't.
I know
play
you're still
anybody.
Upset with the co-coordinators in Ann Arbor. Let me finish my point. I was about to talk about
the
balance.
Just saying.
Now that we've got offensively with Minnesota, with Tanner Morgan, obviously, Ibrahim, they want to run the football with him. But when you start to look at this schedule, Clatt, they're only going to be underdogs twice, at Penn State, at Wisconsin, both very winnable games. Is there a chance we see undefeated in the Big Ten championship game, Minnesota-Ohio State?
I think so. I think Minnesota is vastly underrated right now. I think by the time they get to Wisconsin, they will be favorites. As you see the season play out. So I actually think the only game that they're going to be an underdog is in that Penn State game. I believe that's October 22nd. And, you know, this is a veteran team. You know, Tanner Morgan's been playing longer than Tom Brady. And Mo Ibrahim is about the same. It's like they've got Tom Brady and Frank Gore of college football. They've been there forever. And PJ Flex is a really good coach. That's not a great side of the conference. I think we all understand that. And because of that, their schedule is going to lend itself to being what was, you remember, let's call it like 2015 Iowa, undefeated in the Big Ten championship game against Michigan State and close late. They win that game. They're going to go to the playoff. Now, they ended up losing that game. It was a 22-play drive at the end of the game with Connor Cook. Michigan State went and got absolutely housed by Alabama in the playoff. And that Iowa team went and got housed by Stanford in the Rose Bowl. All of that notwithstanding, I think Minnesota could be a team that at maybe worst is 11-1 in the conference championship game and maybe playing for the right to go to the college football playoff. I think that we've got to wrap our head around that. The one thing that you've got to realize with a team like Minnesota is that they're not going to have the depth to overcome an injury. So their biggest key is actually not schedule. It's not where games are. It's not anything other than they have to stay healthy. Last year, they weren't able to do it. They played really well for the first half of their first game against Ohio State, a game that I did. Mo Ibrahim went down with an Achilles injury, and they just weren't the same at any point after that. They're good at the line of scrimmage. They're really good on defense. And they just did something to Michigan State that only Ohio State has been able to do since Mel Tucker got there, which was run for 200 and throw for 200 in the same game. They did it at Michigan State and absolutely trounced that team. I mean, that wasn't even close. The lone touchdown for Michigan State was garbage time under a minute left in the fourth quarter. So by all intents and purposes, that was a shutout. Minnesota is for real. Again, I go back to they haven't played anybody. If that Michigan State win, I think, is better than people think, even though Michigan State is now 2-2.
Yeah, a good win in East Lansing to a coach that's making $9.5 million. And it's got a great, you know,
Tuck coming for that ass beating.
Yeah. body language. My wife notices this about me, and these guys know it, that my body language will tell you when I don't like something instantly. A dinner, restaurant choice, anything. Caleb Williams had the worst body language all night long in Corvallis, but they still win the game. That felt like a opportunity at the end where he came back, led them to victory, touchdown pass Jordan Addison. It felt like a growing up game for that USC football team to win on the road in Corvallis. What'd you make of USC's win there late against Oregon State?
I think the best thing that Caleb, this is gonna sound snarky. Best thing that Caleb has going for him in terms of his bad body language is that nobody can see it because of the network they played on.
It's so true. No, it's true.
I mean, right? Like that.
Hey, I found a way though.
Yeah, we cheated the system.
Well, so you
listen.
Can,
you got to get a code. You get an access code. You can watch it on your iPad.
Yeah, I got an access code.
There you go. I mean, I do as well, which is fantastic. So I cheat the system as well. So it's the style of that game, I think, is going to be important for USC moving down the road. Very similar to, I think that I said this to you guys. I don't know where I say all these things, but I said at some point into some microphone, I thought it was important the way that Ohio State beat Notre Dame in that opening week because of it wasn't just all the flash of the offense and let's run them out of the building. It's like, hey, like we know you can do that. That's exactly what they did to Wisconsin. But it was important for them to win a tough, hard-nosed ground style attack against Notre Dame where their ground game had to be great late. I thought that was going to pay dividends for them later down the road in the season. We'll see if that's the case. I feel similar to that with USC in this game with Oregon State. First of all, This is a place in Corvallis that USC has historically not played well. And there they are again, not playing well in Corvallis late on a Saturday night. I think it's important because their defense had to show up and play and get takeaways. And they did 4 takeaways, interceptions against Jonathan Smith's Oregon State team. And that's important for them that their defense was able to contribute in a major way to a win. And then there's also another element to this is that through bad body language and through losses, that's when fractures in chemistry occur. And so if you lose that game, there's whispers in the locker room on the sideline about like, man, like Caleb was a jerk, you know, like it can start to fracture. But when you win and you overcome that, it's a huge party in the locker room, and then your chemistry can move forward. And for a team full of transfers, I think that's a really important celebration on the road in that locker room and that style of game. And I think it's really important that the other members of that team see and feel that their contributions matter. And it's not just going to be the Caleb Williams, Jordan Addison show. And they're not going to be able to go out there and just win every single game. Now, they made the play at the end, which is great. And you want that and you need that. But you feel valued as a member of that team if you're on the defense, per se, let's say. And you feel like, okay, like I needed to do my part for us to win that game. And I think that that's an important building block for them moving forward.
Joel Klatt, Fox Sports with us. The big noon kick this week, Michigan, Iowa, Fox 6, 11 o'clock. One of my takeaways from that game, though, was there were, and I don't know if you guys noticed this watching it, but there were several times in the second half, Caleb Williams in the huddle had to stop and collect himself because he was so exhausted. And Klatt, these were not called runs. He was so exhausted because he was getting flushed from the pocket every single play and having to run for his life. Like at one time, I thought he was going to vomit. I really did. I mean, I swear, that's how much he was running.
Like the kid from Purdue?
Yeah. There was one huddle where he had his hands on his knees. That's a problem for USC. They cannot protect the guy for anything.
Two problems with USC questions, I guess, would be like, is their defense going to be able to show up? And then like, what's the line play going to be like? And their defense showed up and they were able to win. And then their offensive line did not play well. And that's one of the big reasons why he struggled so much. Now, he has a tendency, and this dates back to even last year, he has a tendency to, when it's not going well for him, he reverts back to, well, I'm just going to make a play. And he doesn't stay within the foundations of his offense. And so the quick throws were no longer there, and he had to hold the ball, and he immediately starts to run. I thought that he ran a few times, not every time, but a few times before he needed to. And that's a learning experience. He did that against Baylor last year in a loss in a game that I did. He did that against Iowa State. They were able to win, but it was a low scoring affair, and he did not play well against Iowa State late last year. So this is something that has crept up for him in games in which it's not easy. And all I got to tell you is like, I mean, I hate to say it this way, and I sound like the old curmudgeon, but if you aren't in shape, that's on you.
Yep.
I don't know what to tell you, right? Like, if you're going to run around and you better run some sprints this week. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, what we used to do, and this is, you know, very much I walked to school uphill both ways. But what we used to do, I thought it was important to be able to communicate the play and to think being exhausted. So in the off season or even on Monday during conditioning, like when we were really, really conditioning, I would make all the quarterbacks run together. And then as soon as we were done with a sprint, someone had to call a play and explain the details of the play.
Mm.
And I think that's an important learned trait. How do you think when you're exhausted rather than just thinking about how exhausted you are? How do you get right back into the details mentally of what you're about to do? It's a really difficult thing to do. And I think it's something that is lost on this generation, partly because coaches are terrified of really conditioning their players hard.
Fox 6, 11 o'clock Saturday, Michigan at Iowa. See Gus, Jenny, and our guy Joel Klatt at that game. Have a great week, Klatt.
Kiss by a rose, boys.
Kiss by a rose. Jalen, thank you, Klatt. Have a great week.
Yeah, you bet. Didn't play anybody.
Klatt with us on the JohnstonRVCenter.com hotline. And